KHUM is freeform independent radio from Humboldt County, California. Learn more at khum.com.
It is 31 minutes after 2 o'clock, and you're on KHUM, Radio Without the Rules, and we're going to do Coastal Currents right now. Big giant thanks to the sponsors of Coastal Currents. Thank you to Coquetat very, very much. Sponsor for a long, long time, so we really appreciate it. And also thanks to the fine folks at Bayside Garden Supply for sponsoring Coastal Currents. And now it is my pleasure to introduce Delia. Hello, Delia. Happy Wednesday to you.
Yes, to you as well.
Hey, do you see that cord that's going into the back of the mixer there?
Yeah.
What number is it in?
It's in seven.
Seven. this is all part of the plan. It's all part of the...
the fancy introduction
plan. Yeah. You know, I try to mix it up a little bit. Keep things fresh. So anyway. Well, it's good to see you. I appreciate it as always.
Yeah. Good to see you too.
What do we have brewing for today's Coastal Currents?
Brewing, because it's October, Halloween. I like that.
Exactly.
today, we have a really special guest here in the studio with us. His name is Neil Romans, and he is a helicopter pilot for the U.S. Coast Guard. So thank you so much for coming here today, Neil.
Oh, thank you very much, Delia and Larry, for having me.
It is our pleasure, for sure. It's so awesome to have you here. I love seeing a helicopter.
Yeah, we love flying it. We do.
Did you park it outside?
I always wave at it.
That's good.
But I'm sure you can't really see people on the ground when you're flying in the helicopter, can you?
No, we're looking. We might see you waving, and if we do, we'll wave back.
That's why, in my mind, people are always waving back.
Just wave friendly so they don't think you're in trouble.
Right. I never use this wave, the two-handed wave. Well, it's a pleasure, and thanks for coming down to Ferndale.
Absolutely. Beautiful day today in Ferndale, by the way.
It is.
It always is, right?
Yes, that's right. It's never bad in Ferndale.
Well, we thought it would be a good idea to have you on today since we've been experiencing some storms and large swells recently, so thought it might be cool to have you talk a little bit about how folks can stay safe when they're going out to the beach and on land and in boats and however you like to go out to the coast.
Absolutely. We've had a great summer. And we're transitioning into the fall and the winter season, so we're going to start seeing more of the larger storm systems move through. We're going to start seeing the seas increase in size, and it's a reminder that we always need to remain vigilant around the ocean. So we could definitely talk about some beach safety tips and some boating safety tips. I want to stress, first of all, to learn to swim. It seems pretty elementary, but take your kids to swim lessons, learn to swim as a youth, and that becomes a foundation as you grow older to be able to handle the water. If you're an adult and don't know how to swim, there are plenty of programs out there that can teach you how to swim. And that's step one to being safer on the water. A couple tips with swimming. Never swim alone. Always use that buddy system. That way if you come under distress, somebody can either render assistance to you or they can make a phone call for you to get help on the way. If you're out there and let's say you're surfing or bodyboarding, have a leash on your board because if you fall off that board in heavy surf and maybe get injured or something, that board can provide some flotation for you. That can keep your head above water until someone can render aid. And if you're not surfing and you're on the water, wear a life jacket. Especially have one within reach if you're not wearing it immediately. All children should be wearing their life jacket when on the water at all times. And watch your child around the ocean. Never turn your back on the water, never turn your back on the ocean, and watch your children because you take your eyes off them for 1 second, sometimes that could be all it takes for a child to get swept into the sea.
Yeah, those are definitely some good tips, and like you said, they're simple but very important, and I'm curious, so let's say someone is walking along a jetty or walking along a certain kind of beach. Can you tell us like how to stay safe on different kinds of terrain, basically?
Absolutely. First of all, when it comes to rocks and jetties, I don't advise walking out onto them. Even when conditions appear to be benign, appear to be a small sea state, a larger than normal wave can come through And if you're on the jetties, it can envelop you and pull you into the water. Same thing with rocks. Things to watch out for, some of the coast here is beautiful. It's rugged and it's dramatic. So there are places you can get into where you, if you have an abnormally high tide combined with the high sea state, some of those beaches that you've walked along before maybe come under some coastal flooding. The biggest thing there is check conditions before you go. Know before you go and get out on the water and see what type of weather is going to be out there. And if the weather is going to be too intense, the sea's too high, or it doesn't feel right to go, trust your gut and maybe stay away that day.
Yeah, so I know that this weekend, I think, we're going to be having some bigger swells again. So if people are wanting to go out and check out the waves, which is really exciting, those are some great tips for staying safe while you're out there, I think.
Absolutely. The ocean is a beautiful thing, and I admire it as well. And I just want to emphasize that when conditions are rough, admire from a distance. And don't underestimate the power of that ocean and Mother Nature's intensity. It can sweep up on you in a moment's notice. So play it safe out there.
Whenever I read these, there's periodic sort of safety tips or warnings that come around. There always is a discussion of riptides and be aware of riptides and what to do. And I have to admit, I don't really know 100% what a riptide is. So I was hoping you could tell me what that is.
Sure. A riptide, fairly common thing to see in periods of high surf and high tide. So you have a big ship between a high and a low tide. And it's a column of water moving from shore out to sea through the breakers. You can identify it by maybe some foam, some sea foam from churned up or seaweed moving offshore. And as it cuts through the waves through the riptide, they're not going to build as high. So you're going to see these sections between the breaking waves. If you find yourself caught in one, it's going to move you out to sea. People get in trouble when they try and fight the riptide and they feel it and try and swim towards shore, and you'll tire out. So what we recommend is you swim parallel to the shore, because the riptide, it's only so wide. Eventually, you're gonna swim parallel to the shore and swim out of it and then ride the breaking waves back in. The important thing is don't panic and tire yourself out. Don't try and swim against the current and signal someone on the beach as you're being swept out. So someone can get eyes on you, call 911 and get you rescued.
And just be like, don't really get too freaked out about the fact that you're being swept out to sea, because it's not gonna, I mean, you're gonna get swept out.
You're gonna get swept out. You're not gonna get swept out forever. It's gonna, once you're past the breakers, it's gonna dissipate. And then at that point, if you've managed to save your energy, tread water, signal shore, your chances of working your way back in are greatly increased.
Okay. I saw a press release that came by, and I saw some photos also about a rescue the Coast Guard was involved with during this last, this past weekend with the storms come through. I guess there was a sailboat or something like that that some people went out on and were overcome by the weather conditions and got towed back in by the Coast Guard. So I don't know the situation with these folks. I'm not putting this on them, but when you're on these rescue missions from time to time, do you ever think, well, you idiots, like, I don't want to rescue you, because why are you going out in a boat in this kind of condition? Does that thought ever occur to you?
You know, I wouldn't say it does, because first of all, we're very proud of the public service that we do, and you know, if you're in distress on the high seas, our job is to try and get out there and go get you, and we absolutely will. They just happened to be in probably the wrong place at the wrong time, this particular sailboat that had to get the tow. But they did a lot of things right, and I want to emphasize that. Once they realized they weren't going to make their port of call, their port of safe haven, before the storm was going to envelop them, they began radio communications with the Coast Guard. And that's number one. If you feel like you're in distress or you're soon going to be in distress, don't hesitate to call. And they maintained radio communications with the Coast Guard, and we worked out a plan with them. that led up to the towing of the vessel into Crescent City.
Yeah, they sort of rode it out overnight, right? Because you didn't want to send anyone out in the middle of the storm.
Well, what we had was the bar at Humboldt Bay was breaking, and it was breaking at night. And the distress level of the crew of the sailboat was not so high that that it warranted crossing that bar at night by the motor lifeboat crew. So with radio communication to the vessel, it was discussed if they could make it through the night, and they checked in every night, radio watch, every hour on the hour. As soon as first light hit, the 47-foot motor lifeboat crossed the bar at Humboldt Bay and went out and rendered assistance.
And everyone was okay.
And everyone was okay.
Great.
That's the happy ending of the story. But the sailboat did everything right as far as get that communication out there with us, get it early, get it often, let us know what the situation is, and we're going to work with you to effect a rescue plan.
Okay. Curious, when you're not doing rescues, what do you do during the day? Because we know you're not just sitting there, but like, what are your daily tasks otherwise?
Well, you know, we're a highly trained crew, and I'm speaking from both the aviation side, which I'm a part of, and also from the surface side, the motor lifeboats and the cutter crews, and all of our other Coast Guardsmen that operate in the area. We're training, and we're training to effect those rescues. We're training to keep our skills at a high level of readiness, and that's mainly what our operational focus is in between rescues, is training to go out on that dark and stormy night and have the skills that we need to pull someone off the water or render assistance.
We were talking a little bit earlier before we went on the air about when you're in the pilot seat and you're flying, you're very focused on what you're doing, the task at hand, and very sort of situationally aware, and you train for that, and that's a big part of what you do. But does it ever happen that you're scared out there? Like, have you been in situations where you're like, this is a little bit dicey?
Well, it's human to be scared, and it's going to happen. But what you fall back on, and what gets you past scared or fear and into pressing on, is that training that we do, and that reliance on the training. When you're actually out there operational now, and if you've trained well and you've trained consistently, you fall back on it, and the training works. And we train like we would go out and execute a mission on a dark and stormy night.
Do you train in bad weather? Like, do you go out when it's storming just to get a feel for it?
Not just to get a feel for it, but what we have is we have weather that we can train in. So if the weather falls below a certain level, and we say, okay, it's too risky to train in now, but we will still go and conduct an operational mission in. So all the way down to that minimum weather that we need, we'll train in so that we do get some experience in. And some of the challenging terrain, sea state, and weather that does occur off the north coast here.
So you're looking at times. You're looking for kind of windy, breezy, stormy weather. So okay, let's go. Time to practice.
If it meets the contract the Coast Guard has laid out for us, that they say you can go and train in this, we're going to go and train in that.
Yeah. Awesome. Not hard to find here. Plenty of that. I'm curious. What is? Can you give us an example of a mission that you've done that? Like something that stands out to you and in memory? We're just interested in the really high intensity things here, as you can tell.
I may be the wrong guy for high intensity. I'm a little new to the unit, but I do have a mission we went out on. We were at Point Arena. This was during abalone season, and we got a call for overdue abalone divers. So good thing the abalone divers did is he told his friend, hey, we're going to be back at 2. If we're not back at 2, call someone. So friend did. Great. Tell a buddy, phone a friend, file a float plan. They did a good job there. We were 10 minutes away, so we diverted. And once we got on scene, we were able to quickly identify the abalone divers. There were 3 of them. They were all alive. They were got pushed by the swell into a cove where they were having difficulty getting out of. So other assets were on station. We were able to vector in a ropes team who helped the abalone divers up the cliff and on the shore. So that was a great success story because we found they told somebody, we're gonna be back at 2. They weren't back at 2, they called us. We had an asset close by. We got eyes on them quickly. They weren't under distress. Always a good thing with abalone divers. And we got them out of the cove and up to safety using some other agencies, cooperating with other agencies in the area. So I think that was a big success story to me.
Definitely.
How far, how large of an area are you responsible for?
We're responsible for just south of Point Arena, all the way up to the California-Oregon border.
And all of that is coordinated out of the McKinleyville station?
That's correct.
Oh, okay.
How many people are at that station?
We have roughly 220 people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, do you have any other questions for Nia?
I have a lot of questions.
Right?
Yeah, but this is all, it seems so sort of random and scattershot that I'm just jumping around so much. But I'm interested in a little bit of the kind of the overall mission of the Coast Guard. It seems like you guys have responsibility for a really broad range of things, not just the public safety stuff that we've talked about, but there's also law enforcement functions that the Coast Guard does, and regulatory functions, making sure that ships are complying with regulations and stuff like that. So I was wondering if you could sort of briefly just talk about the many areas the Coast Guard is responsible for.
The Coast Guard has 11 total missions, and some of those are what you touched on. So some of what we have here that operate out of the sector Humboldt Bay is you have the air station or the aircraft, which I'm a part of, down at Noyo River, Fort Bragg area, and here at Station Humboldt Bay, we have 47-foot motor lifeboats, and they operate a surf school out there, so they train other 47-foot motor lifeboat operators to drive those boats in heavy surf. So I'm not sure if you've ever seen the pictures of them crashing through the 20-footers off the jetty, right? That's some pretty awesome stuff. We have the Marine Safety Detachment, and those are the guys who deal with any kind of pollution, oil spill, any sort of environmental damage, compliance with vessels, and hazmat and all that stuff like that. We also have an ESD, which is our electronics guys as well, who help us with the Coast Guard network and all the, you know, technology heavy now, right? So with a lot of the technology stuff we have there.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome.
I have another question, actually, that's kind of unrelated.
Sure.
But not really. Is the haunted house going on this year?
The
Coast Guard haunted house.
Is that the one at the barn, right?
Yeah.
At Eureka Housing? I don't think we have it this year. But we're looking to maybe bring it back. So more to come on that maybe next year. I'll let you guys know.
Had to ask.
We'll have you back next year.
Well, I've heard it was a huge hit.
It is, yeah. It's one of the lesser important things that you do, you know, but.
I appreciate you asking, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, do you have any other things that you want to talk about?
I don't, but we should go on a helicopter ride sometime.
Yes. Absolutely. Let's see what we can do.
I think it's important for our overall understanding.
Yes.
Get a good view of the coastline.
Yes.
And you know, all the things that impact it.
Nice.
Exactly.
this may be, I don't know, this is a ridiculous question. I know it is, and maybe not so. But it's pretty expensive to run a helicopter, right? Like when you take it up and you go out and you rescue someone, that's a lot of money. Do people get charged for that? Or is it just the solid American taxpayer is picking up the bill?
Well, I think I feel like there's a consensus or maybe a rumor that says that, hey, if you call the Coast Guard and it's they find you negligent or something, that you're going to get hit with a bill.
That's what I believe.
I don't believe that's true.
Okay.
No. But what is punishable is any kind of a hoax or a false distress call. If they find, if they investigate that and find that, you know, there's no legitimacy to the distress call, it's completely a hoax, then you can be found liable for that.
But not if it's a, so if I'm just a dumbass and I get myself in trouble, and you spend like $30,000 flying the helicopter out to save me, that's just, thanks, guys.
Yeah, we'll spend that $30,000 to save you.
Right. That's a good question, because, you know, maybe someone is like, oh, I'm okay, I'll wait it out, but you should just call and be saved.
That's what we, yeah.
Yeah, like a tsunami's coming and someone wants to surf it. It seems to me that it should be on them.
That would definitely be on them. I don't know of anyone wanting to do that.
We'll still come get you if we can. But I want people to know. I want people to be comfortable with initiating communication with the Coast Guard on Channel 16. If you feel like you're becoming under distress, if you're not in immediate distress, don't hesitate. You can contact Sector Humboldt Bay on Channel 16. That's the Marine Band Emergency Channel. And request to move to another frequency if you want to talk not on the emergency channel. Communication is key. The quicker we find out that something might be happening to you, you know, the quicker we can respond and get a plan together. That's what it's all about.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. It's really great having you. I really appreciate you coming out.
I appreciate you guys inviting me down. Beautiful day here in Ferndale. I appreciate it. Hope to see you guys soon.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Thank you so much.
All right, Delia, thank you very much. Do you have anything to add before I close out this episode?
I do not.
Okay.
Yeah, this was really great, though. I'm so glad that we all got to be here for this.
Yeah, that's very cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, that'll do it then for Coastal Currents. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to Delia, and big, giant thanks to Coquitat for sponsoring Coastal Currents and to Bayside Garden Supply as well.
This has been a KHUM production. For more information, check out khum.com or search KHUM in iTunes.